Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of Speaking with Authority. I'm really excited today because we have Zach, a man who's gone from the rodeo to the board speaker. He helps organizations with leadership, and I'm real excited to have him on our podcast. Now, Zach, tell us who you are and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Jim. Yeah, so growing up, I lived in a small town and grew up with horses. And by the time I was 14, I decided I wanted to ride saddle broncs in the rodeo. So that's where the story really starts. So for 2 years, I did nothing but hit the ground. I broke my hand, ankle, and collarbone. Several concussions, probably not really sure on that, but pretty sure that that's what happened. And, you know, took 2 years of hitting the ground, 0 points, never once made it the 8-second buzzer. And then went on to become 2-time state champion, though. So I know what it's like to struggle, to be in the arena, and to stick with something long enough that success comes. And, you know, that was growing up. But then for my second wild ride, I was a vice president of sales for a $300 million logistics company. And after about a 10-year career there, every year's another promotion, another new project. Now for several years, I've been vice president of sales. And over a glass of bourbon, I'm pretty much told, Zach, you know, you're a good soldier, but that's not leadership. And just like that, I was demoted back down to sales guy. And Michael, who'd been with the organization for like 10 months, took over the sales team. And I find myself back almost where I felt like I started, you know. And so that's where my story really actually begins, because then I set out to really figure out this thing called leadership. I went on a journey where it eventually led me to become a coach and consultant. Now I'm helping leaders be better leaders. That's what I do full time.
That's fascinating. So tell me a little more about that. So you're in a role and you're in a leadership position, but somebody comes to you and says, Zach, you need to work on some things. We're going to put you back down to sales rep. That difficult conversation.
Yeah, it was. And you know, in that moment, I was confused, I was angry, I was frustrated, all those emotions.
Yeah.
Maybe questioning if I'm even good enough, questioning if, well, shoot, maybe I should just go to a different organization and be a VP of sales for somebody else. But deep down, I was kind of like, well, who am I kidding? That's not really what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
And I started to realize, like, in many ways, I'd lost track of what I really wanted to do and who I wanted to be as a leader. And that goes into a lot of the work I do today. Is I call it the good soldier dilemma. I think a lot of leaders, they mm-hmm. reach a level of their careers where for many years they've been groomed and mentored and promoted and one assignment after the next, but then eventually they find themselves in the saddle of leadership, full on. There's nobody coming anymore. You are the leader. And yeah. The very thing that got you to that position doesn't allow you to be successful and doesn't allow you to be the leader you want to be. And that's really was the beginning of my story, because that's when I had to start answering the question for myself, who am I? Why am mm-hmm. I here? What's the contribution I want to make? And that set me on a whole new path. And I've worked with leaders inside organizations. It doesn't necessarily lead people outside of the organization. It actually sometimes leads them into being a true leader in the boardroom with their peers. And that's what I do now. And because that good soldier dilemma, it creeps up on you and it just doesn't allow you to be who you know you can be as a leader in your organization.
That's really good. Now, it sounds like, you know, you went through a journey of becoming self-aware and asking some of those difficult questions on leadership and what's it like to be on the other side of me and who am I kidding? You know, all of those questions are self-examination. I think that is so important today in leadership and leaders going through that process. It's a constant challenge. I don't know if you find this, but when a leader stops going from why don't they get it to I wonder what it's like to be on the other side of me, that's when real transformation starts. Do you find that as well?
Yeah. I call that a principle that I teach called saddle your own horse. And as leaders, to really come from a place of radical responsibility and, you know, that why don't they get this or what, you know, can't they see I'm working? Can't they see how hard I'm trying and mm-hmm. all of that? There's kind of an outside in perspective where we're looking out there for affirmation, for people to tell us you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
But I think there's a primary shift that we have to go through, a fundamental shift as leaders, is it has to become more of an inside out. We have to tap into what are the results I desire to create. And if I'm not seeing in my organizations the results that I want to see, it's on me to look at who am I being to contribute to these things that I say I don't want, so that I can put myself back in the saddle my own horse, and be an agent of change to influence things in a positive direction. And it starts with you, the leader. And that's a shift. Yeah, what you just asked, that question, looking inwardly first for the answer, for the solution.
Let's back up a little bit. So tell me the concept of saddle your horse. Tell me where this comes from. Tell me the story behind that.
Yeah.
How did you get to saddle my horse? I mean, this is something you think every rodeo person would have to do, but you've got a whole talk about this. Tell me about this. Help me understand that.
Yeah. Well, I did a TED talk on this very topic last year, saddle your own horse. It comes from growing up. I think I was 11 years old, and I was starting to team rope in the rodeo, and we were going to all these county fair rodeos, and we met this cowboy named Bruce, and he invited me out to his ranch to work with him for an entire week. So mom's going to trailer me and the horse to his ranch. She's going to leave, and I'm going to be with him for an entire week working on his ranch. Well, the day comes, my mom leaves. I'm there, my horse, Joe, and I, and Bruce comes out, and he basically says, Zach, well, why don't you go saddle up your horse, meet me in the arena, well, let's get started. And I'm like, okay, absolutely. You know, I'm just 11 years old. I'm sure. I'm heading to the barn to go get Joe. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, mom's always saddled my horse. So I'm like, I don't really know how to saddle. I've never done it before. I've seen her do it. You know, I mean, how hard could it be? I just know I'm not going to ask Bruce. It's just, that's not an option. So I go get Joe, my horse. I bring him to the horse trailer, pull out the saddle, and the saddle weighs as much as I do. It takes several attempts, but I finally wrestle that thing up onto Joe's back. I cinch it down, and I ride into the arena. And that day, I don't know, there's something, as I rode into the arena, I had this awareness of who I was being in that moment. Like, I was riding taller in the saddle. And what I realized, that you don't become a real cowboy until you saddle your own horse. And that's a leadership principle, that for us to truly grow, we have to put ourselves in a position where we have to saddle our own horse. And that's a two-way street. If we want to see our people grow, you know, the people in our teams, we have to give them a horse to saddle and get the heck out of their way. And that's the principle, saddle your own horse.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Do you find, and I'll find leaders, there's different types of leaders, all sorts of different types, but sometimes I'll find the leader who will give somebody a project and they're struggling to get through it, and the leader says, oh, that's okay, I'll just do it myself, I'll just get it done. They don't know how to do it. And I know they're out there. Do you find that? And is that a detriment to the people you lead?
The I'll do it myself thought? Yeah.
Leader, well, jumping in.
Yeah. You know, when I encounter that, so when I work with leadership teams or one-on-one, that's something that's real. It's like, I know I need to let go. I know I need to delegate, but it just feels faster and safer and more certain if I just do it myself.
Yeah.
And just to acknowledge, like, that's normal. If you're not thinking that from time to time, that'd be strange. Mm-hmm. Yet, what I love to do is help leaders see, what does it look like for you to step into a bigger arena? Because I've found it's really hard to let go of things if you're not clear of what you're going to grab onto after you let go. You know, like, if you're not clear of a bigger game that you're being asked to play, because what I've found in life and in my own business is the higher the stakes, the bigger the game that I desire to play. Another way of saying it is the bigger the vision that I want to play up to, the more it just becomes a necessity to let go and let others support you. And so, you know what? If you're not in the arena growing yourself, that's an option. You can just keep doing it all yourself. But if you're going to elevate yourself, break free of that good soldier dilemma, some of these stories we tell ourselves about, it's easier to do it myself, or what if they get it wrong, or I don't know if they're ready.
Yeah.
That's going to hold not only you back, everybody around you back.
Mm. That's good. That's good. Now, you mentioned you did a TED talk about a year ago. Tell me about that. How did you get, I mean, those are not easy to get. A lot of people, pay people top dollar to get in and help them get a TED talk. Tell me about that. Tell me the story behind that.
Well, over the last, I don't know how many years, 6, 7 years, I've really wrestled with this dilemma between doing and being, doing and being. And for that good soldier dilemma, like doing, grind, discipline, I know how to do that. And yet, that TED talk, what it was really interesting because there was a period where I was doing, trying to get a TED talk. And it wasn't working out. And I finally just said, moved on. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to, this isn't for me, And I just started being a coach and being my message and started that saddle your own horse story. I was just telling it to everybody and sharing what I was passionate about and why I think it matters in organizations and for the individuals in the organizations. And I just was embodying this message to the point I was at a event with a group of other coaches and speakers. And we were at a table and I was just sharing again for like probably the 80th time what I wanted to build, the message I had that I wanted to share. And I was just unapologetic about it. I was just sharing myself, being the message. And because I was doing that, a woman sitting at the table said, well, I didn't know she did this, actually. She went up to her partner, who was also in attendance, and told her about my message. He walks up to me that night during a little cocktail mixer, and he basically hands me what he calls the golden ticket. And he said, we want you to give a TED talk in Youngstown, Ohio. Next year in May. And I was like, wait, what a minute, what, and like, I was like, well, how much is this going to cost? What's the catch? He's like, there's no catch. In fact, we're paying for your flight. You're going to have a black car service pick you up at the airport. We're going to get you a coach. And I'm like, whoa. And I stayed in touch with this guy. And about 6 months later, we were having a drink and he said, well, Zach, the number one reason why I picked you for a TED talk wasn't because I thought you were some intellectually bright person. It was because of your passion and your enthusiasm for what you were doing. Like, I want people to hear this message. I want them to experience your energy. And so that's my story. Now, everybody's story is going to be unique, but what I'm learning from that is how much power comes from who you're being. Because I think it's easy to get in your head about a TED talk. That's an example, but anything. How do you get a TED talk? And if you go looking for the how, you're going to get a bunch of smart people telling you how to get a TED talk, but they're going to be missing the most critical factor, and that's you and what you bring, that message you're going to embody, your passion, your heart. So that's my answer to how that happened for me. It was when I stopped trying and I started just embodying the message. And it's funny how life attracts opportunities to you when you be that, when you show up that way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I always talk to great speakers, and one of my favorites, who I've become with is a guy by the name of David J.P. Phillips, probably one of the best speakers in the world, and his Presentery Master Program is probably the best as far as speaking is concerned. And I always ask him, I said, David, tell me about the business of speaking. I want to know all the ins and outs. How do you get gig speaking? How do people pay you? How do you do this? And he always comes back with the same exact answer. He says, Jim, it's real easy. Be so good they can't ignore you. So tell me about your speaking business. How's the TED Talk helped you, and how do you get hired for speaking? Know about the business.
Well, my coach and mentor, different message, but the same message. Be so good they can't ignore you. And that's what I've done. I have not chased after the how. How do you launch a speaking business? How do you get paid as a speaker? Those questions didn't interest me as much. And what I've learned is, what would it take to be a great speaker? Who would I need to be being to be the type of speaker on the stages that I desire to be? And for me, I've learned from my mentor and coach, Bo Eason. He has an event in La Jolla, California, twice a year called Personal Story Power. And that's where the whole journey started for me. I knew I had a story to tell. I had no idea what it was. I didn't. I was just wanting to be a better storyteller for like podcasts and social media. But then I met Bo, and he was all about sharing your personal story. And I joined his program, and what I learned from him was I have this story of a 14-year-old kid learning to ride Bronx, and most people in my life did not know that story. I didn't tell them that. I put that in the rearview mirror and forgot about it. Well, he got me. He's like, you got to be telling that story everywhere you go. That, and it's really become a brand for me, and yeah, it's what I built my whole business around. And that's what's launched my speaking career, is uncovering who I am, who I've always been, and sharing it more with people, and then harnessing it in the form of like a keynote talk, where I've discovered, as I've shared my personal story, that I have a knack for the physicality of storytelling, like actually physicalizing and not telling people the story, but actually showing, revealing the story to them. And one of the number one things Bo taught me was people, they don't listen to your story as if it's about you. They listen as if it's about them. They listen autobiographically.
Yeah.
There's the old saying, what's most universal is most personal.
Yeah.
And
that's fascinating. That's fascinating. And first of all, Bo Eason, if you don't know who he is, look him up, but he is one of the greatest. I've met him a couple times. Runt of the litter. What a great, great mentor, influencer, man.
I didn't realize you've aware of Bo's work.
Oh yeah. I talked to Bo when I was in Nashville. We had a good conversation. I got to see him present part of the Runt of the Litter, and I was just gobsmacked by his presentation. Unbelievable, the emotions and how he tells the story. And then I was watching your TED talk, and I could see you've had some training. You've had this come naturally to you. You're a gifted, talented speaker.
Yeah. Well, that all came from Bo. Just he wrote a one-man show, Run of the Litter. And so he was trained in like drama and acting and theater. And he's bringing that into, he does a phenomenal keynote. And there's a lot of what he does that I want to bring too. I don't bring PowerPoints to my keynotes. I don't. I want it to be storytelling. I want it to be physicality, and I want it to be interactive with the audience. So I'm a coach and facilitator, so I'm learning how to engage the audience in some of my content. But part of the whole business of speaking is doing it your own way. I just think there's so many speakers out there in the world right now. They're just kind of doing the same thing. It's like they got their slide decks and their quotes and their stories from sports. And I'm trying to just, not that those things are bad. It's just that I'm trying not to ask how, because when you ask how, you go out in the world and you grab other people's. I'm really trying to create my own vision of what being the best speaker looks like for my craft and what I do.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, the Bo Eason thing. Now you've got my brain all thinking about Bo and the things that I pulled from him. But a lot of people don't know he was a professional football player, and things that I thought was fascinating about him. This is the one thing that I picked up about him was when he went to college to play football, the people that he surrounded himself with to practice all went on further. In fact, his brother, you know the story of his brother? He was a quarterback for the New England Patriots. And I think why he was is because he practiced so much with Bo, and it was just, it's just amazing. What other insights have you gotten from this man? Because he's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I just think he teaches something about being the best, and that stuck with me. Because I think before I met Bo, I think whenever I'd hear the best, well, that's kind of arrogant. I was taught to be humble.
Yeah.
But what I've learned from Bo is, the best is a mountain with no top. There is no getting to be the best. But if you make a commitment to your life to be the best at something, to be the best in the world at something, these are Bo's words, your life becomes different. It becomes a lot simpler. The vision, the dream starts to dictate where you spend your time and energy. And so what I learned most from Bo is just this principle of the best isn't about doing, it's about who you're being.
Yeah.
The best, because when you're the best show up differently. They just show up differently in every area of their life, and that's why they're the best. So he talked to us a lot about being the best now. Be the best and play to that standard. There are no levels. be the best. And that's stuck with me. And it's woven throughout my work too. It can't not be, because it was such a big catalyst for me about 3 years ago when I really started going deep with him and his work. Yeah.
So how has that translated into your speaking business? I mean, do you do a lot of speaking? Do you do it mostly locally, or do you go all over the place? Or tell me about what type of people you speak in front of?
Well, I've been all over the U.S. I get invited in to speak to like different trade associations. Organizations will also bring me in, right? Organizations that might be doing like a leadership summit or a sales conference where they're needing a message to kick things off or set a tone. And so, I'm about 2.5 years into this. And these past 6 to 8 months, I really feel like I'm gaining some new momentum. It's been really exciting.
Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Now, if somebody, after you get done speaking, do you take a company, hey, listen, I want you to help me grow the organization, or do something in the organization after you're speaking? So I noticed you have some credentials with EOS. That's something with the entrepreneur operating system and traction, or is that a wheelhouse that you work a lot with?
Yeah. So I'm also a professional EOS implementer. So that's work I do with leadership teams. So I'll go into an organization, work with the leadership team to help them really do three things we call vision, traction, healthy, helping them get crystal clear on their vision and their plan, and then creating real accountability in the business. You know, this is that creating an environment where everybody saddles their own horse. Like, how do we create an environment where there's real traction, discipline, and accountability? And then healthy, in that helping create an environment for the leadership team to really enjoy working with one another, because most of the time they don't enjoy working with one another. And so really creating that culture of fun, loving, cohesive engagement across from top to bottom, left to right. That's what we do in the EOS. Yeah, there's over 800 implementers worldwide in the EOS community, and I'm just fortunate enough to be one of them.
Yeah, it's a great program. And if you have a book, Traction, start with it. It's hard to just go from that book. You really need somebody like yourself to do that. And I know a lot of businesses who have implemented, people that I've mentored, jumped in full force, and it's had a dramatic change on their business.
For sure. Yeah. It's done a lot of good for a lot of companies and a lot of leadership teams, no question.
Now, what do you see as some of the modern leadership challenges? I mean, we're in a different age. I have my own ideas on different challenges that we have within leadership nowadays of 30, 40 years ago. What are you seeing are the biggest challenges leaders are facing today?
Yeah, that's interesting. There's AI and there's all these things, and I'm not an AI expert, so I'm not even going to go down that road. But if I was a smart intellectual person, I would talk about AI, because that seems to be pretty revolutionary right now. When companies like Spotify are saying, don't bring me a new position unless you can give me a business case for how AI can't do it. You know, that's interesting. That's got my attention. Yet I'll be honest, I don't like to get too caught up in the buzzwords of what's going on in leadership, because, you know, pick up a Harvard Business Review and you're going to read things about burnout or strategy and all these things. It's just like, I don't even know what this stuff means half the time. Like, and you read the articles and I'm like, I feel like I'm more about some tried and true foundational pillars that we need to bring back into leadership. I think we've gotten so over-intellectualized. That's not a word. We've become too over-intellectual about leadership. It's become a science. And we talk about competencies, and there's all these books on empathy and self-compassion and self-awareness. And it's all based on science, science, science. Not dissing on science, but we've gotten so in our head about leadership. I'm more about getting people back into their heart, getting back to the true art of leadership, where leadership isn't about what you do or how you do it. It's about who you're being. And I don't know if that's a modern thing or not. I'm kind of going against the grain of what's modern is, how do we create more certainty when it comes to leadership? How do we measure it better? How do we get our competencies dialed in? And how do we train our people what they need to do to be a leader? I'm just like, I don't want to play in that space. I want to get back to the human art of leadership, because I think that's, we can't, they almost don't go together. And the more we get in our head about how do you have a difficult conversation with somebody, well, it always comes across fake. It just does. It's like I'm using a tool on my people, and I'm more interested in who are you being, because who you're being while you do it makes all the difference. You can do it wrong, but be coming from the right place, and 99% of the time it's going to be effective. It's about who you're being and where your heart is and what your intentions are. I just don't want to get caught up in the how-tos of leadership.
Yeah, I think there is a becoming. You don't have to use as many words leader if you become somebody that people want to follow. You know, I think there are two types of leaders. One, they both bring joy into a room. One brings joy into the room when they and the other brings joy into the room when they walk out. And becoming that person, it takes self-awareness, it takes self-leadership, and it takes a little bit of thought, but it's all about being and becoming, because I don't think the tactics or strategies are as effective if you're not that person who has become to help people implement that. So I think that's something really interesting to talk about and think about. When people hire you to come speak, what is the outcome that they're wanting for their leaders? Why are they attracted to your talk?
Well, I think when organizations bring me in to talk to their teams, they're really wanting to cultivate an environment where everybody saddles their own horse. And in many ways, because they're already looking for that, they already are that in many ways. But they really believe in personal responsibility, autonomy, creating an environment where people get to feel their own growth and progress. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're looking for. And that's what we do. And because one of the things I do in my, especially when I go into an organization, is that saddle your own horse, we don't just talk about it, we experience it. And one of my favorite questions I ask is, what are you tolerating? You know, and you think about that, and we're all tolerating something in our life. There's something that's not quite right, but we live with it and we tolerate it. And usually when I ask that question in a leadership setting, they start talking about somebody on their team or some process or somebody out there. But then after we talk about that for a while, the next question is, how might you be contributing to this thing that you say you don't want? How might you be contributing? What part of this can you own? Mm-hmm. And usually it comes out that, like, well, I've never even shared with that other person that that's not working great for me, or I would like a different approach, or I just tolerate it. I don't ask for what I actually want. We don't have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And so how are they contributing? Well, I'm allowing it. I'm not bringing it up. I'm not confronting it. In fact, I'm avoiding it. And so what you avoid, you're going to just continually get more of that. Mm-hmm. And I find that the more we can saddle our own horse and go into the very thing we're avoiding, because if you think about it, the things that we're most avoiding in life hold the key. Like the old Joseph Campbell quote, the cave you fear the most holds the treasure you seek. And what you're avoiding, like everything you want in life, is just on the other side of something you're avoiding. And so as a leader, it's like, what are you avoiding? Because let's go in that direction, because that's where the opportunity for growth is, not just for yourself, but your entire organization.
Oh, I like that. Now, how do you create a culture of accountability in that area?
Yeah. Well, accountability is interesting, because I was talking to a client about that and the topic of how do I hold my people accountable? And my answer is you don't hold people accountable. Like, that is such a baloney thing. Because part of this saddle your own horse principle is the fundamental belief of that is you have to see people as powerful. And there's the old Patty McCord quote. I don't know if it's an old quote. It's a fairly new quote, but I heard her share it on a podcast episode. She said, our job isn't to empower people. Patty McCord used to be the former chief people officer of Netflix. And she was being interviewed and the word empowerment came up. And she said, our job as leaders is not to empower people. Yeah. She said, well, think about the meaning empower. It means to give power. So she asked, she's like, well, who took it away in the first place?
Yeah.
And she said, our job as leaders is to remind people they walk in the door with power and to create the conditions for them to use it. And that's where accountability comes in. Accountability isn't something we do to people. It can only be chosen. So we have to create an environment where people are able to choose to be accountable. And so how do we do that? Well, we've got to create agreements, set clear direction, expectations, really set the direction and have clarity. And that's a two-way street. But then I can't hold you accountable. You have to either choose to be accountable or choose not to be accountable. And that's your choice. I find that to be very helpful, because if I put it on me to hold somebody else accountable, they don't ever get to feel the weight of responsibility. And I think that's where people truly grow. That's where engagement comes from. That's where growth, that's where accountability comes from, is when you, me, and everybody feels the weight of our own personal responsibility.
No, I really like that. That's really, really good. Self-leadership.
Yeah. Something
I'm not going to babysit you. You're going to have some metrics that you're going to try. Yeah, it's your responsibility to saddle your own horse.
Yeah. Yeah. And now that doesn't mean we're not supportive, you know, but but I think we far too often, we see people struggling, mm-hmm. and it triggers our own insecurities. And so we jump in and we rescue them and help them and fix very quickly. Like a lot of leaders today are already always looking for a problem to solve. They're just already always like, where's the problem? Oh, there's one. Oh, you're struggling. How can I help you today? Let me help. Well, that's all fine and good. But I'm really trying to teach leaders, like, we've got to let people saddle their own horse. So that means we've got to get out of their way. Now, if they're struggling, we can ask them questions like, what do you need maybe that you're not getting? Or what's the real challenge here for you? But we can invite them to ask for support, but we're so quick to just dole it out. I want to teach leaders to be available to support their team without taking the ownership and responsibility away from the individual, because we're almost diminishing all the work we've done to develop somebody the second we jump in and rescue and fix and solve their problems. We've got to keep that responsibility with them while also learning to coach and support them through the process.
Well, I think a lot of leaders miss the what support means and what it means to challenge. And I think you have to have the proper balance of support and challenge, or you can't liberate somebody. If you have too much support, then you create a culture of entitlement. And if you have too much challenge, then you create a culture of fear and intimidation. And I think there has to be a good balance of that. But I once talked to somebody, and he says, I can't motivate your people. You know, higher self-motivation. People got to motivate themselves. I can inspire. I can't motivate. And I think that's very interesting as far as a way of looking at it from a self-leadership perspective.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Now talk to me about, you know, personal growth and continuous learning. How do you teach an organization to constantly improve on their personal growth? How do you get leaders to set example with that? And, how do you think that helps you as a coach?
Yeah. Well, I think it starts with who you're being. Like, that's always my answer, because mm-hmm. it kind of frustrates me how often the words, how do I get somebody to do anything, is in the context of leadership. Like, because yeah. I'll be in a workshop and, you know, I open it up. What's on your mind? What questions? And how do I get her to blah, blah, blah? Or how do I get him or them to engage more? Or how do I get them to step up? Get them, and that, as if it's our job to get that, to make that, like, that's where we, right out of the gate, we're stepping off on the wrong foot. And that's where this idea of saddling your own horse really comes into play, because people have to choose whether or not they learn or grow. And it's a concept I call put people in the arena. Mm-hmm. We live in a world right now where we're so fixated on mental health and well-being and anxiety and the lack, trying to get rid of anxiety and manage stress. And as leaders, we're kind of put in a position where we feel like we have to coddle people. And I think it's hurting them more than helping them. It's not serving the greater good, because people are powerful. And what I've learned is when you're willing to ask more of people, not less, that's when they have to dig a little deeper and discover what's within them and own their own experience. Yeah. And so I'm trying to think of an example of this, because this comes up often. Let's say we have somebody who's burnout. I'm burnout, you know, and they're struggling. They're visually struggling. And it's a real thing. It's a real feeling. Yet what we often do is, oh, you're burnout. Well, how can I help you with that? What can I take off your plate? You know, maybe you could take Fridays off for a couple days or, you know, a couple weeks. And we jump in with solutions to other people's challenges. And then they play into that like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll try that. Yeah, okay. Well, 3-4 weeks later, well, it didn't work. I'm still burnt out. Looking to you for the answer. And I think that's what where we're going wrong is, and I've learned this as a coach. For the last 5 years, I've coached leaders. And as a coach, my job isn't to give anybody advice or consult them on what they should or shouldn't do. It's about helping them access and find their own solutions to what they desire to create in their life. And I think we can apply that to the individual who's burnt out, because we have to be willing to sit at the table in a very supportive way, but ask that person, what do you need that you're not getting right now? What specifically is not working for you? What would need to be different for you to kind of be your best self again? Because this isn't like you. But notice how I'm not the one answering the question. I'm not giving them the solution. I'm asking, I'm digging. And that's where we have to be willing to go deeper with people and stop taking them off the hot seat, because pain creates change. What we do is we jump in with our tissues and our solutions. We remove the pain so quickly that people don't ever have to deal with what's really not working for them. But as leaders, if we could learn to stay with them and be with them long enough for them to discover what they need to do to move from burnout to a little bit more vitality in their work. Now we have to come behind them and support them in that. Absolutely. Like, we play a role, but we got to let them go first. And we're not, we're jumping in with our solutions and our books and our calm meditation apps and our Zen rooms. And it's ridiculous. It's like, let's get back to the power of people, because people, like, throughout human history, we're pretty resilient creatures, you know? And so we just need to, I want to help people tap back into that a little bit in our organizations.
Yeah. And you can't have happiness without that tension, or without that, you know, you can't have happiness without anxiety. You have to have a little bit, you know, you have to have a little bit of cortisol, a little bit of norepinephrine. And I work with a lot of, you know, so I do a lot of addiction recovery work, but I'll be occasionally talking to a parent who's always rescuing a child. And the question I'll often ask is, who are you to deny them their pain? Because they can't grow out of that. I use the example of the caterpillar and the cocoon and the butterfly. You know, if you get the cocoon and open that up, you'll kill the butterfly. If you take the chicken egg and you open that up for the chicken, he doesn't build up enough neck muscle to, you know, to get out of there. You know, people have to go through a pain, and they have to go through a challenge. It's okay to support them, encourage them, and bring them through there, but to deny them their pain, you're creating more problems. A lot of times leaders don't want to challenge people in that area. They're over-supportive, and they create an environment of entitlement. And so that's a big challenge. You're right. What advice do you have for aspiring leaders, for people who are seeking roles or wanting to grow as a leader? Go up the chain? Start their own business, or learning to lead?
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of going back to the quote you shared with us at the beginning, that be so good they can't ignore you. And It's almost like being a better leader or being a leader isn't the right goal for people. And I'm saying that to myself, because when that was the goal, there was always some, well, this is what an ideal leader should look like. And so where's the gap? Oh, I need to learn. I can see all these weaknesses. And I focused on that. And what I'm learning, which makes sense logically, like, yeah, there's probably some validity to doing that. But I don't know. I think I work with a little bit more mature leaders, leaders that have been around the block a few times. Like, they've been leading people for several years, but they're starting to realize that, hey, this approach really isn't working for me to truly lead this organization. Mm-hmm. It's charged with making sure everybody around me is happy and pleased. And that can be flat out exhausting. Because the reality is, if you're leading a 100-plus person organization, not everybody's going to agree all the time. But they don't have to. There's an environment where when we lead from a place of vision and values and other things, people can disagree and commit. They can be a part of something bigger than themselves. And so I'm finding that leadership isn't the right goal. I'm just saying this out loud for the first time. I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's my whole business. I teach people to be better leaders. But what I think I really do is help them get clear on what is, I call it eyes on the bronc. What is your bronc? What is your big, bold vision or goal for your role in this organization? That's beyond leadership. Like, what do you want? What impact do you want to make? What's the result you want to create? What type of organization do you want to have? Because that starts to demand something of you and me. And that's a, I like that. I like looking at what are we trying to create here? And then, because when you get a big vision like that, all things kind of fall into place. Well, of course I'm going to have to include others and have people come along with me for this journey. And so it's less about the title leader and it's less about that. And it's more about what's the result we desire to create? What is it? And then people support what they create. So enlisting other people in that. Yeah. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but that's
good. That's good.
Different place to come from. Yeah, Jim.
What nuggets of wisdom have been some of the best advice that you've gotten as a leader and your personal growth?
I don't know. It was probably more of an experience for me because it was when I was deemed the good soldier, you know, and I get demoted and now I'm working for this guy named Michael and I'm starting to watch how he's showing up and how he's leading. And it's just, it's like, he's calm, he's focused, he's intentional. While I'm over here, like emotional roller coaster, up, down, he's just unflappable and steady. And frankly, it kind of pissed me off. And I'm like, I don't want to be a good soldier. I want to be a great leader like Michael, you know, how I want what he has. And what I realized it was really what I wanted is his way of being, his presence. And so that was what set me on a journey. It's like when I started to be around somebody who was leading with a different approach and I could see the results, it just put me on a different path to discover that new approach to break free of the good soldier dilemma that I found myself in. So it wasn't anything he said to me. It was what he asked me. Now I'm thinking about, it was about a year in and we were doing a performance review, an annual review. And usually these annual reviews, right? As the leader, you show up with, here's what you're doing great. Here's what you could do better. And it's a lot of rah-rah, like we'd really appreciate. And, you know, here's what the future looks like for you. And we're all this, we lead with our vision to get people motivated. Because that's what I always experience. You're doing great, Zach. You know, here's what we see for you in the future. We'd like you to go over here and solve this problem or take this new challenge on. Well, this time that didn't happen. Michael sat across from me over a cup of coffee and it was like, so Zach, what's your plan to impact the organization next year? What's your plan? How do you plan to contribute to the organization in 2020 or whatever it was, 2018? And he genuinely was asking with curiosity, what do you got to say, Zach? And I didn't have an answer. I was like, wait, I was a little pissed off. I'm like, wait a minute, aren't you supposed to tell me like what I need to be doing next year? You know, like, but that's probably the number one nugget of wisdom. That's a long answer to your question, but that, for the first time, I felt the weight of responsibility of leadership. I'm like, this is something that I need to create and contribute to. It's not my organization telling me what it needs from me. I'm a leader in this organization. And so that was pretty profound for me to see that. And actually not just see it, but feel it and go through that journey of like, oh, interesting. Yeah.
That's good. Any thoughts that you want to convey as far as to our listeners?
Yeah, well, I think there's this distinction that I've found really helpful. And it's a question of, are you in the grandstands, waiting, watching, second guessing yourself, looking out there for the answers, or are you in the arena? And in the arena, things happen in real time. You have to deal with what's occurring. You have to engage with the people in the situation and really play full out. And that's just a question that I've wrestled with. And I've just fundamentally chosen, like, I'm going to live and lead my life from the arena, not the grandstands. And I find that to be a helpful question. And it's different because when you get in the arena, it's no longer about pleasing others or waiting for approval, waiting for permission. In the arena is just about, you get to decide in this very moment who you want to be.
Yeah.
And that's powerful because you get to engage with that and it starts to inform, just back to the TEDx, it will start to attract your life to you when you're in the arena, when you're playing full out and being and embodying your message and who you truly are and desire to be.
And Zach, how would people hire you? How do they find you? How do they hire you as a speaker? How do they hire you as a coach?
Well, they can just go to my website to learn more, www.zacharand.com. And if they're interested, I did put together a Get in the Arena toolkit. It's a series of resources where I created an empowering question guide. So these are questions you can ask yourself or your team. And then there's three principles that I've built around Saddle Your Own Horse. So if they're interested in that, they can go to zacharand.com/toolkit and get that, which is just a collection of resources. And they'll, of course, learn more about my work through doing that.
I like it. And then speaking, they can find all of that information on your website. Is there any problem or challenge in the leadership arena that you're really good at fixing or helping companies with?
Yeah, I think it's about creating environments of ownership and engagement. And one of the things that I've found is any companies going through transition or change, I'm a great catalyst to that change, because one of the things we explore in the room together is the stories we're telling ourselves about ourselves and each other and the organization. And those stories that we tell ourselves often color the way we see our organizations. And so depending when changes are occurring in the organization, what lens are we viewing those changes through? And naturally, if we can move the room into a more empowered way of seeing the situation, they're going to show up differently, and it's going to create more of a environment where we make progress together instead of fighting it. So often we want to fight change, which is also progress. And so I think those are the two areas that I'm finding a lot of success with organizations.
Very good. Very good. Well, Zach, thank you for sitting down with me and having this conversation. I learned a lot from you. I didn't know a lot of things about you, and I'm glad that we had this conversation.
Yeah. Thanks,
Jim. I hope that people find you and hire you. You have lots of success.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me on today.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And